Did you know that Gaur Nittai used to be worshipped in Manhattan? Gaur Nittai, Radha Govinda, and Jagannath? Did you know that? Jagannath in Baltimore? When the 55th Street Temple was sold, Jagannath went first to Lake Huntington, then from Lake Huntington to Baltimore. And Gaur Nittai went here. And there was some plan to try to get them back, and they didn't want to come back. Or at least the devotees didn't want them to come back. So a little report on what you just did for the last 2 hours. A little feedback. Just sharing so I know how it went.
It was very positive experience to go going and talking to all the devotees and finding out their qualities, what they have, with regards to the list of questions, and appreciating them genuinely. And then, one more thing is listening attentively to a person. And one topic came up is is it just the content we need to listen to, or we need to take that emotion also inside? So that was very wonderful for me.
Okay. You found it helpful?
Yes.
Anyone else? Just so I get a little picture, some snapshot. Nobody else? Okay. Somebody else? No, did you volunteer, Ganesha?
Okay.
I'm not twisting your arm.
We're meeting a very nice Peabody. It's me, Krishna consciousness, Shukti Matati. She's so refreshing to meet somebody that finds everything, so wonderful. She has developed a connection with Srila Prabhupada, appreciation for Srila Prabhupada, the books. She's distributing books in her complex. She goes to people's houses and knocks on the door and distributes the books.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, she's having a lot of fun. And
that was your highlight, huh?
Talking with her.
So the mission accomplished. Mm-hmm. Exchanging.
It was very nice.
And what did she learn about you?
I just started to learn that story.
Well, we all started somewhere. That's nice.
Krishna's mercy, but I didn't even learn about Mataji, that even she had, the way she started was almost the same as the way I started. It was very nice, she was telling how you actually spoke to her during one of the fests, and you said that you asked her to start calling people and asking them for asking them to start chanting. And Mataji herself was very new to it, and she started doing it because she was telling her children, in grace and mercy. And so many people were lining up to receive it from Mataji, but she was so touched, and she was also explaining a different, I think it was the Earth Fest, Earth Day, where she was distributing prasadam. All the prasadam was over, there was only powders of the pakoda. And still there were people saying, I want more, and then Mataji said, there are only powders left, and they were it's okay, we still want this. Oh my God, we've never seen this happen anywhere else. People even want that, that's the potency of the prasadam. So it was wonderful, stories of
sharing
Mataji. And Mataji had a person who was sitting there, he was the person who actually introduced me to Krishna consciousness. It was wonderful,
and
very grateful to Prabhu and his grace.
Very nice. How I came to Krishna consciousness is always a nice.
And there is another Dastra festival in the DC, where Prabhu had invited me, you know, as in those place, and he said, start chanting 16 rounds, Mataji, and it was like, it started from there.
It started from there, where's it go next?
No, before that we had met in Milan, and I was just chanting only 3 rounds. But it was good, and Mataji's face, it was just wonderful. Okay. And the evening we met a lot of devotees, and there was a great Hari Nam, you know, chanting. Pilar was part of it, because it was wonderful. Not feeling thoughts, not feeling hunger, and by doing it, it was like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. That was nice.
You've got a lot of enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness. Okay. So, I understand. When I walked in, it looked like you were all very busy, and then I shut you down. So maybe, let's see what happens. We can continue after. I just came with the scheduled time. I wanted to share two things. One is in relation to this morning, from Nectar of Instruction, Rupa Goswami's book that's been translated by Srila Prabhupada and commented. In text 5, Rupa Goswami writes about respect, and then further and then further, stages of that. But it starts with respecting those who chant Krishna's name even once, because the chanting of Krishna's name is so powerful. Krishneti yasya giritam manasadriyeta. One should mentally honor the devotee who chants the holy name of Krishna. That doesn't say just once, but one who is chanting, one should honor them mentally. One should offer humble obeisances to the devotee who has undergone spiritual initiation, diksha, and is engaged in worshipping the deity. And one should associate with and faithfully serve that pure devotee who has advanced in undeviated devotional service and whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. So we spoke this morning about becoming free from that fault of praise and criticism, the praise being, that's okay, and criticism is not okay. The Sanskrit is nindadi. So we know that from the 10 offenses, sadhu ninda. So Prabhupada has translated that as to vilify or sometimes to criticize the devotees of the Lord who engage in chanting the holy name. So the topmost stage, as mentioned during their question-answer session, like Haridas Pandit, who would never be in the presence of someone who would criticize others. He just wouldn't hear it. But rather, not that such a person can't see what's what, but they just don't engage themselves in expounding upon the shortcomings of others. They're free from that tendency. And always engage in Krishna service. Yeah, whose heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others and engaged in undeviated devotional service. Avyavichari bhakti. Or Ananya Bhakti, those same terms used in Bhagavad Gita are here. So, there's a nice purport, and we won't go through the purport because I want to go to the previous verse that speaks about loving exchanges. But in this short treatise that's a summary of the process of devotional service or the activities, the stages of devotional service, just 11 verses, two of them are dedicated to relationships, Vaishnava relationships, how to properly respect and how to engage in loving relationships, essential to the bhakti process. So these refer to the stages Kanishtha, Madhyama, and Uttama. And Kanishtha is one who simply engages in the activity of chanting. It qualifies one. Chanting brings one to that stage of qualification. There's a section in Chaitanya Charitamrita, very similar. No surprise that Rupa Goswami's teachings follow Lord Chaitanya's teachings. When the circumstances when the devotees were returning back to their place of residence, having spent the 4 months of the rainy season with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, along with attending the Rath Yatra festival. So when they were to return, Lord Chaitanya received them one by one, or the groups of persons going to their different destinations, and there was some very warm, loving, parting exchanges. And in one case, the devotees from Kulinagram, headed by Satyaraj Khan and others, went to Lord Chaitanya and asked him, what is our duty as householders? A few householders here. What is our duty as householders? We don't know what is our duty in life. What should we do? So Lord Chaitanya gave two recommendations. Chant the holy name of the Lord as much as possible. Chant constantly if you can. And the second is, when you have the opportunity, serve the devotees of the Lord. Two things. Chant and serve the devotees. And then Satyaraj Khan asked, how do we know who is a devotee? And the answer, in successive years they asked the same question. And successive years, Lord Chaitanya gave the Kanishtha Adhikari, Uttama Adhikari, and Madhyama Adhikari and Uttama Adhikari positions as a definition of a devotee. And the first year he said, anyone who chants Krishna's name even once, consider that person to be a devotee. And in the instruction of Rupa Goswami is, within your mind, mentally, at least, you honor them. This is the same as the point this morning about respecting, because someone is carrying Krishna bhakti in their heart. Respect goes to that, to the Krishna bhakti into the heart and to the person who's carrying that in their heart, and in instruction by Rupa Goswami. The next year, Lord Chaitanya gave a similar one to what's stated here. The person who has dedicated their life to chanting the holy name, and they're initiated in following all the standards of sadhana bhakti, you honor them. They're the Vaishnav, and you serve them. And then the next one is the Uttama Adhikari. Just by seeing such a person, others are induced to chant. That was the case of Nityananda and his party as they were traveling around under the order of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya himself, as he was traveling in South India, just by seeing him at a distance, people would begin to chant. He'd raise his arms. And people would begin to chant. That's the topmost stage. Topmost of the topmost stage. Not possible for an ordinary person to achieve such a stage, just like, anyway, so the Mahabhav stage of Radharani is unique. One can attain the stage of Bhava, Bhakti, but Radharani's position is unique. But Lord Chaitanya was so amazing that he empowered persons to do things even he had appeared that he couldn't do and he had them do. The one who receives empowerment can do anything. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita it says, even to induce someone to chant Krishna's name, it requires direct empowerment by Krishna to do so. Like sometimes you ask people to chant and they can't or they won't. Sometimes you try to trick them. Like people, when they see me traveling, these days, instead of saying, are you part of a religious organization, they say, are you a Buddhist monk? And my response is, no, I'm not a Buddhist monk, I'm a Krishna monk. Have you ever heard of a Krishna monk before? And they say, Krishna monk? Krishna monk. Very good. And to do like that, of course, it may happen very easily, but even if it happens very easily, it's empowerment. It's not, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, not possible otherwise. The mercy of Krishna has to come into that act. One becomes an instrument, empowered in the hand of Lord Chaitanya to, because otherwise, where are we? We're not in that position. But in the previous verse, there's the famous six types of loving exchanges, and I'd like to read the verse, but also some parts of the purport. Tadati pratigrinati goyam akyati prichchati bhunkte bojayate chaiva shadvidham pritivakshanam. Offering gifts in charity, accepting charitable gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, acquiring confidentially, accepting prasad and offering prasad are the six symptoms of love shared by one devotee and another. And the first paragraph is a summary, it just says it again. In this verse, Sri Rupa Goswami explains how to perform devotional activities in the association of other devotees. There are six kinds of activities. One, giving in charity to the devotees. Two, accepting from the devotees whatever they may offer in return. Three, opening one's mind to the devotees. Four, inquiring from them about the confidential service of the Lord. Five, honoring prasad or spiritual food given by the devotees. And six, feeding the devotees with prasad. An experienced devotee explains, and an inexperienced devotee learns from him. This is guyam akyati prichati. So guyam akyati prichati doesn't just mean that's one kind of confidential. But this is another kind of it's a kind of confidential. But especially what's meant is spiritual topics. Topics that directly touch the soul. That's confidential. And the soul's position in relation to the Supreme Soul, that's confidential. The activities of exchanging service and receiving mercy from the Lord, most confidential. That kind. And that those are loving exchanges, directly being described here. When a devotee distributes prasad, remnants of food offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in order to maintain our spirit of devotional service, we must accept this prasad as the Lord's grace received through the pure devotees. We should also invite the pure devotees to our home, offer them prasad, and be prepared to please them in all respects. This is called Bhunkte Bhojayate Chaiva. And you're all familiar with the purport, I'm sure. Prabhupada describes that he formed the International Society for Krishna Consciousness specifically for that purpose, to provide a forum for loving exchanges of these different types. And he explains, I've produced so many books, and so we go to families' homes and invite them to become life members of our organization. But we give something to them. They assist us in our work, and we give them our books. Specifically, that's something that Prabhupada had designed for life membership. He explained it to the devotees that were, Sridhar Swami discussed this with me, because in Bombay that's where it started, life membership. It was the intention was to distribute his books, because in Bombay so many people, wealthy people, well-established people, he wanted them to have his books. So one of the ways that he came up with was, in a respectable fashion, approach them with dignity, invite them to assist us, and give books. And then there was some measure of whatever the amount was that they gave to become a member. It was the same ratio of what they expected from book distribution. It was a modest amount, and a whole standing order of books, because some other group of devotees were out visiting colleges and making standing orders, which means as the books are printed, they will receive them, and they purchase a total amount and standing order as they come. They're delivered, and then they remit. And that way, the guarantee of his books being distributed as they were printed was already taken care of. It was a very good plan. So while that was going on so successfully, he wanted life membership. But he describes it in this book as part of the loving exchange, offering of gifts, receiving of gifts, offering of prasad, receiving prasad, disclosing one's mind in confidence. Now, when it comes to some of the previous verses about Shadvir Bhaktir Vinashati, there are six different things that can destroy, or Shadvir Bhaktir Prasidhyati, those things that nourish and help perfect your devotional service, how you relate to non-devotees, Asat Sangatyag, Evaishnavachar, how do you follow that principle of not associating with worldly-minded persons, especially when you go to work and there's worldly-minded persons. What are you supposed to do? Quit? Or find a place where there's not worldly-minded persons, and that only is the place where you work? How do you do that in Kali Yuga? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, because he was also a householder that was following Rupa Goswami's teachings, he explained it very nicely, that in the workplace or other situations where there's worldly association, worldly people moving about, It's not a violation of that standard. It's not wrong that you are cordial. And he gives examples of simple cordialities, like people say all the time, how are you today? How's your family? How's your health? How are things going? Those kinds of cordialities, he explains, is not in a violation or not, doesn't contaminate one's consciousness. But one should, the injunction or the prohibition is to discuss things about your decisions of life and things that requires some spiritual component to get it right. Those things you don't discuss with worldly-minded persons. They're not going to offer proper advice. So you don't enter into those kinds of topics with those people. That's how Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains. But amongst the devotees, of course, there's different kinds of relationships that we have in Krishna consciousness. We don't discuss anything and everything with everyone and everybody. But in general, specific to the same verse that was discussed yesterday evening, I didn't bring the book with me, but it was spoken by Krishna to Uddhava in the 28th chapter of 11th canto, where loving exchanges specifically are fostered by discussing Krishna Katha. That by that process of Bhagavad, not Vibhuti, Bhagavad, the glories of the Lord. When the glories of the Lord are discussed in the company of other devotees, this, it purifies one's existence, it gives one full both parties, satisfaction, happiness, and relief. Nivritti, detachment from material existence. That's what, in the association of devotees, that's the richness that we have to offer. This wonderful treasure of transcendental knowledge that we've been given, and share it with one another. So, it immediately is a kind of loving exchange. We spent some time yesterday evening discussing that topic in full. So that's what the intention of our founder Acharya in establishing so many temples. It accomplished many things, actually. Sometimes Prabhupada would speak about in lectures so many temples so that persons can come and get an impression of the deity. You know, otherwise we don't need a big establishment, big overhead, and you know, it's a headache. But it was done by him, and he engaged his disciples in doing, to give ordinary people, otherwise not connected to Krishna consciousness, some opportunity to see the deity, to hear the message, and now here he's saying to have loving exchanges. So that means, practically speaking, that those of us that are nicely connected in practices, our practices of Krishna consciousness, it's part of our service to our founder Acharya to receive the guests that come nicely. It's also part of our service to the guests that come to show loving exchanges amongst one another as a service to them, because if they come and they see something different than that, it's not so inviting. If they see something like that, it's so inviting. A little sharing. I had a phone conversation with Pyari Mohan Prabhu. He's our temple president in East Hartford Temple. And I forget, we were covering many different subjects during our conversation, but he shared with me what his first experience in visiting the Brooklyn Temple and Henry Street was. He said, like most people that come to the temple for the first time, because he was born and raised in Brooklyn, that means you don't trust people so easily. Because you got to watch your backside, because anything could happen. It's a tough city. So when he came to the temple, he didn't know exactly what to expect. He had a little bit of apprehension. Remember one devotee describing, they walked, visiting the Boston temple the first time. They went, they had intentions to go to the Sunday program 20 times. They went as they up to the door, and they just kept walking because they felt apprehension about going in. Then finally somebody was out on the steps and said, oh, come on in. So they came, they went in, and that was, so Pyari felt a little apprehension. But when he, from the first person, because we had a whole very carefully orchestrated arrangement to receive guests, the very first person, and then the next person, and then the next person, and every single other person that he encountered, he said it was such a, you know, Pyari, he just was effusive. It was such a nice experience. You know, coming from Brooklyn to, everyone was so nice, it was such a nice experience. When I left, I remember walking out down the steps and out the front door thinking, wow, this is such a special place. I want to come back again. And it wasn't even, you know, the philosophy or the kirtan or the prasadam. It was the devotees were so wonderfully affable and warm and friendly. And it wasn't just to him as the guest. Their relationships were very, very strong amongst the devotees, and that's so attractive. So it's part of helping others to become Krishna conscious, to have loving relationships with other devotees. And frankly, that's one of the reasons for focusing on this topic. It is pleasing to our founder Acharya to do what he wanted. And one of the things that he wanted, of course, was spread Krishna consciousness. But that's just part, one half. The more devotees, the other part is happier devotees. The happier devotees are those that are feeling fulfilled in their relationships. So it takes some investment of time, sensitivity, and all kinds of nice things to develop nice relationships. So that's what this day has been, at least the design, was dedicated to helping little steps, because everything happens that's enduring at least. It happens incrementally, little by little by little. And that's a whole other topic on this part of devotee relationships that like to speak about, but another time. And it's now 5:45, and the original schedule that we had was that we would go to 6, but that was when we were starting, when the snowstorm was coming. So that didn't happen. What time should we go until? I had thought, did you announce the schedule? Jagatananda was to go from after lunch till 5, and I would go till 6, and then we'll have some, at least somebody had the suggestion, some sharing of stories of some exchanges that were meaningful. Yes? Okay. Anybody has to go before 7 o'clock? Have something you have to attend to? Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? So we can go until 7, and that's all right, schedule-wise? Okay. So, any discussion on this or whatever you'd like to discuss on our topic here? Questions or comments?
I have a question.
Yes.
especially like the, you know, the how you're telling that how the loving relationship between the devotees is so encouraging and inspiring, like, you know, for the guests when they come when they stay. But it sometimes when there's some kind of, you know, wishing, so some kind of purification happens.
Some kind of a what?
Some kind of, you know, tendencies come out like angry or, you know.
The guest or you?
No, no. Yes, within the devotee community. And then especially when someone is visiting or something like that. So what do you suggest, Maharaj? Like, I feel like just be real, we cannot take it out, you know, we have. And when we have some kind of things going on, just be real and, you know, try to stay.
Yes. We're not perfected beings, and those things may arise. Something that Prabhupada described, I don't think it's in the current version of Science of Self-Realization, but one of the earlier versions, there was an exchange of letters. One woman wrote to Srila Prabhupada, Swamiji, praise your movement, your books, your work, everything is wonderful, and then was the criticism. But your followers don't represent you so well. Sometimes they do this and that, and it doesn't look good, doesn't represent you properly. I just wanted to share that with you. So Prabhupada wrote back, you're very kind, by the mercy of my spiritual master, so much good fortune has come, and it's by his grace and the wonderful devotees who are helping me, and so statements like that. Then he addressed the criticism by saying, please forgive them, overlook whatever mistakes they may make. Please understand it is like a person who is in the shower because they know that they're not clean and they're trying to make themselves clean. Don't fault them for being not clean. Because they know that. That's why they're in the shower. And similarly, the devotees, they're not perfected beings. They're striving to purify themselves. So please look at the effort to strive that they're striving to purify themselves rather than what their shortcomings and imperfections are. Thank you very much for your kind words. Hare Krishna. So, something like that. By the mercy of our previous teachers, anyone and everyone is welcome, and you make such a broad net like that, and there are going to be some persons who are still needing much purification. And so those things are going to come out. It's certainly not what the teaching is, and it's not the example of one who's living by the teachings. But they're trying to purify themselves, so respect that. And our teachers should be both teachers by example and regularly reminding everyone what where we're headed, what the purpose is. The purpose is purification. And we should strive for that and set the standard. Something else?
Maharaj, you made a statement that one who receives empowerment can do anything. So I would like to hear more on how we can work towards receiving empowerment.
The formula is pretty simple. It's recognizing that an instruction has been given and having faith that the instruction can be fulfilled simply because it's given. It's quite simple. I'll give a couple of examples. I remember when as a new devotee in the Boston Temple, we got a very large shipment of Back to Godhead magazines. And we didn't know how in the world we were going to distribute all those Back to Godhead magazines, because it was a monthly thing. We get this big shipment, then another big shipment. We have to finish one before the next one comes. But somehow we did it. And then I saw the letter back from Prabhupada. Oh, this is very nice. The Boston Temple, LA Temple, New York Temple, Montreal Temple. So we should now, the next issue is going to be, it was like 10 times more. Now send this many to this place and that many to that place. And we thought, how are we going to do this? But somehow we did it. And then it went from Back to Godhead magazines to small books. Oh, how are we going to do it? And then it was small books, and we did it. And there was Nectar of Devotion, paperback. You know, 400 pages. How are we going to do it? And we did it. And hardcover books. Impossible. And then I remember, you know, on the West Coast, they went to gas stations, and they filled up with gas, and they convinced the people, instead of giving you, take our book. And then the big van had traveled around and, you know, sold the books. So, hey, you can do it. We can do it. Then we started doing it. And that was Bhagavad Gita. And then it was Krishna book. You know, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're supposed to distribute those. Big silver cover. Krishna, with diacritics, which people can't read. And we did it. Because Prabhupada wanted it to happen. And so many things. Same thing on the order, when one understands this is something Krishna wants, or this is something that our disciplic succession wants, it's within the instruction to do so is the empowerment to do so. And one who has faith can be carried by that strength. So that's how one can become empowered to do something you can't otherwise do. Faith in instruction to do so. Empowerment. Prabhupada received his instruction, and he lamented, or spoke in humble ways, that he wasted so much time not doing. But he said, I never had any lack of faith in the instruction, I just didn't feel qualified. But then, Mission Impossible became possible. Something else, yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So we've been hearing your respect for Mani. So, one Srimad Bhagavatam verse that talks about how actually only a devotee has good qualities, and a person who is not a devotee, he doesn't have any good qualities. So my understanding is, I don't think the Bhagavatam is advocating disrespect to the person, but is the Bhagavatam cautioning us from associating with them very closely? Is that what the Bhagavatam is saying?
Not exactly. It's speaking about what's sat and what is asat. That's what the Bhagavatam is speaking about. So, with persons that are, we use the word pious, or persons who are in the mode of goodness, something may be manifest that looks like a good quality. It looks like sat, but it's not, because it's from the material energy. It's a product of the material energy, which means it's there for some time and then it disappears. And something else will take its place, and something else will take that place. And it's the ever-changing transformation of the material energy. Ever-changing, ever-changing, ever-changing. So that which appears will then disappear. It's not substance. Or using the language in the earlier first verse of the Bhagavatam, there's to use the word sat and asat, a substance and category. And the substantial thing is not, like, here's a chair, I'm sitting in a chair. There's no offense to the chair, but it's temporary. Before it was something else, and later it's going to be something else, and now it's a chair. So I'm using it, but it's not substantial. So the qualities that are manifested in this world, they're not substantial. That's the meaning. Someone may do good work, and that's a good quality, but it's not resting upon sat, and therefore it's going to be gone. And that which is resting upon sat, or is in relation to Krishna, that's eternal. The qualities that decorate the devotee, they don't, provided they remain fixed in the spiritual position, they're ever increasing. They're not, it doesn't go the other way. It's substantial as opposed to insubstantial. Substance as opposed to category.
Is it also to do with, you know, Swarupa Lakshana and then the other things follow?
Yes, yes. The primary characteristic quality of a devotee is they're fully surrendered unto Krishna. And because they're fully surrendered unto Krishna, the qualities that are decorating the devotee, because Krishna is the decorator, it's spiritual. Their qualities are spiritual. They're enduring. And they're also endearing. They're very attractive. Take any one of the other qualities, and what it looks like for a pure devotee, and what it looks like for a pious man, they're qualitatively different. To an untrained person, they may look the same. But to a person that's not even, someone that's just a little refined. I mean, can you imagine being in the presence of Lord Nityananda? And just by seeing him, your whole body erupts in ecstasy of love of God, and you begin chanting spontaneously. That's beyond piety. That's not the qualification of a pious man.
So how do we practically live with, interact with such people in this world? There may be many people who have these qualities. So we don't associate with them.
We respect them. And we wish that they can make that nice quality a permanent quality by just connecting that quality to devotion to Krishna. And so somehow, by inspiration and by whatever intelligence Krishna gives, how to help them connect that with Krishna. Anything else? Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, I'm thinking how to handle the situation where there is a person or group of persons being disrespectful to ISKCON or Srila Prabhupada or to Guru Maharaj. Should I just try to ignore them? But maybe I'm doing that because I do not have the knowledge to respond to that, or maybe I'm being fearful, or should I try to confront them? But maybe I'm doing that out of my false ego. I don't know how to handle such a situation.
If it's the role that you should take a lot, there's a lot of variables. It depends on a number of things. One of those things it depends on is, are those individuals with whom you have to associate or do associate circumstantially over a prolonged period of time? Or at the other end, is it a one-time interaction? For example, the people that come around at Rath Yatra time with their trash literature that are just offending anybody left, right, sideways. That's one thing. You know, we don't want them to distribute that trash literature and hang out with people. So we may do something specific in that case. Inoculate some people or go just... Anyway, different things we can do. One of the things that I've done, is I see people walking around with those literatures and they say, "Oh, you got one of those. You're supposed to have one of these instead. May I have it?" And just exchange the literature. They don't know the difference between one literature and another literature. And they say, "Oh, sure." And take the literature and give them something nice. But so if it's an ongoing thing, it becomes more serious. If you hear criticism, there is, according to Rupa Goswami's Nectar of Devotion, there are three choices. And one of them, the last one, is ruled out. Take your life. Defeat the person in argument, walk away from the place, or take your life. Not their life. Because the idea is the seriousness of hearing vilification of a Vaishnava is very detrimental spiritually. If you have the not just the courage, but the wherewithal, the spiritual acumen, the spiritual knowledge, to take what it is that they say and present scriptural conclusions on the basis of scripture, then entering into a dialogue with that person may make sense. However, many persons that are of that spirit, they're not interested in reason and logic. They're just plain offensive. And so engaging in dialogue with a person that has no interest in dialogue, they're only interested in one thing, then it's not wise to engage in dialogue. And so walk away from the situation. The nature of such people is so they have many things they have gripes about. So it goes on to the next thing and on to the next thing with another person and the next thing, commonly. But to just remain passive, that's a mistake. You hear an offense and don't do anything, say anything, or leave the place, then it's not good for you. So don't stay and just be passive. What did Narada Muni do when Daksha was criticizing him? Remember? Daksha, Narada, this is Daksha part two, not the Daksha who, you know, had the Daksha Yagya, and not that one. And Sati gave up her life. And after he was, and so it's Daksha part two. So, Narada Muni, he was given a queen, by Lord Vishnu, who would produce good praja. And from the queen, 10,000 sons, then 1,000 sons, and Narada Muni came and enlisted them in his bhakti program. they didn't become householders, they became brahmacharis and very saintly persons. So Daksha became very angry. And he cursed Narada. First he vilified him. But Narada went there specifically to deliver Daksha, knowing that this is what Daksha would do, and he just waited until he finished and then gave him Krishna consciousness. Doesn't say how he gave him Krishna consciousness, but he was expecting that because that's Daksha's nature. But his interest was beyond, you know, proving himself right or something like that. He was interested in bringing Daksha to a higher spiritual position. That was his focus. Depends on one's spiritual qualification, it depends on the circumstance, it depends on the duration, depends on so many variables. What's the best way to respond? But if you get into a duel, a tit for tat, you say this and I'm going to say that, you just got drawn into the material energy. And that's not a very nice kind. That's not the right response. So not out of false ego, but out of for the well-being of the other and for the well-being of your own devotional creeper, you hear something and you speak something. Not for sake of winning an argument or getting back at them or something. For their purification. And some person just can't hear. You do that and it just makes the fire stronger. So one of the methods of dealing with, we use this word, detractors, just ignore them. And they'll go off and scream and yell about something else. Because that's just the nature of the person. You give them attention and it'll just fuel to the fire. Pour gasoline on the fire. Depends on the variables.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Bol.
Sometimes we have to associate with our own relatives, our family.
Sometimes.
Yes. You know, we always have association with the devotees in the temple.
Yeah.
There is no temple as well. So many occasions we have to. And we cannot just ignore them. So what we have to do? How to reunite our great base of our family?
Well, if you're a sannyasi, you do one thing. And if you're not a sannyasi, your choices are different. A simple answer is become qualified, become a pure devotee, and as an instrument of Krishna, help them become pure devotees, or help them to make a little progress in devotional practice. And if you're not yet a pure devotee, or if you associate in such a way that you are trying to give, at least mindfully, praying to Krishna to give Krishna conscious association. Circumstances may not permit it, but at least in your consciousness you're trying like that, praying like that, just looking for the opportunity, that's the appropriate opportunity, not just hammering them, but looking for the appropriate opportunity where Krishna consciousness can be presented and received. And even if the opportunity doesn't seem to present itself, you're protected because you're thinking in that way. You're praying in that way. You're spiritually protected. and another is to carry the qualities of a devotee that are so nice, it becomes attracted even to worldly relatives. Wow. Look at our relative. He's so happy and his qualities are so nice. He's really changed. Like, what's going on with him? Oh, it's that Krishna consciousness thing. Really? Well, what's that? Maybe tell me something about that thing. Just by your own, by carrying Krishna consciousness, it becomes attractive to others. And it, consistently like that, then they want to hear. Like a little, my immediate family members don't inquire so much. And I don't spend so much time with them. I spend time with the devotees. That's my family. They want me to go and hang out with them and, you know, stuff. And they're okay. Meaning, they see that I'm happy. They see that I'm really dedicated to what I'm doing. It's just my nature. I'm really dedicated to what I'm doing. I'm not in any danger. I'm not being neglected or something. So they're happy. Except they wish I would go and hang out with them some more. What to do? So within limits, you know, expectations of worldly people can never be met. So within limits that just are respectable and reasonable, you do that. And when that's happening, you're giving the best example, and otherwise you're associating with devotees.